You are listening to the Independence Network.
It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
Good morning and welcome to the morning show. How's it going this morning, Joey?
Oh, not too bad at all. Got plenty of things lined up to get me through my day, but starting off the morning, looks like there's a lot of stuff going on up there in your neck of the woods. Good things, bad things, all sorts of things happening in Sheridan today, huh?
Well, first of all, happy days are here again. No more Cyrus Western. Apparently, frat boy has decided that he needs to focus on his family, which, you know, good on him. The only problem with that is we're going to have a whole bunch of little Cyrus Westerns running around, which is not good for anybody. But at least he's not running for office.
Yeah, that's why I get a little hesitant when you say no more Cyrus Western. I believe the plan is to make more Cyrus Western, and that. I'm not going to knock the guy for it. It's the classic thing in politics, though. I'll take it with a grain of salt. Anytime somebody else has something else going on in politics, they always cite, you know, I need to spend more time with my family. I want to start a family. I'm concerned, you know, my dad is sick or, you know, family health. It's the classic tap out for some other reason. And I went and did a little bit of research, and I think he knows he's already in trouble. And I know Lori Bratton is a formidable opponent. And there's other things going on with Cyrus that haven't, I don't know, been investigated enough to come to light. There may not be anything there, but we've been looking into a few things. But he only won his last race by like 35 votes. So I don't know that he's that confident he would have done that well. And with his, you know, hardcore Harvard ego, I don't know if he could have taken it. So he probably did the classic, I'm going to use my family as the excuse to step out and not embarrass myself this time around. That's just my take on it, though.
Well, I think you're exactly right. There have been no bones made that a lot of people were going to be focused on Cyrus Western in this election, namely yours truly. And so I think that he probably looked at the writing on the wall and said, Lori's a formidable candidate. I've done a lot of things that aren't exactly up to par, and probably a better idea just to bow out. The only question I have is who are they going to replace him with?
And there's time for that. The problem I have is, in my mind, it's too late. You don't sit around and hope the incumbent's running and then scramble at the last minute to find somebody. But it really doesn't matter. The bottom line is the toughest hurdle to get over is beating an incumbent. Incumbency seems to have some strong, I don't know, presence in people's mind here in Wyoming. And I guess that kind of rings true across the nation. But whoever they put up there is going to have just as hard, if not a harder time than Cyrus Western, having been the incumbent. And again, that's not just based on the fact that he did so poorly in his last election, even though he got elected. But, you know, Lori's not pulling any punches. I talked to her a little bit last night, and she is not deterred at all thinking about slowing down or taking it easy. She is campaigning. Even if there's no opponent, she is going to be out there campaigning. So that's a tough machine to stand up against. Obviously, if you're the incumbent, Cyrus Western decided to step out of the way. And I think any newcomers, they're going to have something real special and all-encompassing to even have a shot against Lori Bratton.
Well, I spoke with her last night also, and what she told me is, nope, this means we're going to double down, that we're going to campaign even harder than we were before. And, you know, the only thing, I talked about this a little bit on the podcast this morning, that I think this was all set up probably before the legislative session ever kicked off. And the reason I say that is there were a couple of moves that they made where they handed off really untenable positions to different representatives that you normally wouldn't see that sort of stuff come from. For example, Cyrus Western's vomit-worthy speech about House Bill 203, that dumb sales tax bill. You know, why would you give that dumb speech on the floor? And secondly, plagiarize part of it, though I'm sure nobody thought that we would catch him on that. Another example of that was all of the amendments to Chloe's Law that were crafted originally by Barry Crago. And the reason we know that is he handed those amendments off to Ember Oakley. And Ember Oakley is the one that delivered them on the floor. Well, there's been rumors that Oakley may not run for re-election because there's a county attorney position that's going to be opening up in Fremont County, or at least she wants to run for the county attorney position. So generally speaking, you let members that are not going to be running for re-election take the more crappy positions on the floor. And in a couple of cases, I don't know, maybe it's kind of a stretch with Cyrus, but I saw a couple of those things happen on the floor, and it made me kind of wonder, okay, well, maybe this person isn't going to run for re-election.
Yeah, we also didn't get any pushback when we did our Lyndon B. Western review, and we spent a couple days on that, and we did the side-by-side audio on the morning show here on the Independence Network, and crickets. Normally, these goofballs would at least go off somewhere else on, you know, Facebook or whatever and make a stink over any little thing we say or do, but there's a good possibility that he already had in his mind he wasn't going to run. I don't think you make the decision to start a family in the 6 days we've had since session, or however long it's been, almost a week and a half now. And it is what it is. I wouldn't be surprised. Ember Oakley, again, a lot of these people are not real public servants. They're what I call title hunters. So if they can move up, you know, what they consider a bonus on their resume, they're going to go for that. It's not a surprise. It's interesting though, that Ember Oakley's looking to run for a different office, whether it's, you know, for her own personal career advancement or not, because we have that law in Wyoming that you can only run for one office at a time. But if you're currently in an office that isn't up for re-election, you can go ahead and run for another office. We saw that last time around with Tara Nethercott running for Secretary of State while she got to retain her Senate seat. And this is kind of a pet peeve of mine. And I think that's a violation of political equality, because nobody in the House and half of the senators can't run for these other offices and retain their offices like that, which provides an additional, I don't know, political capability for some of these senators. And I think that's the next thing that I'm going to throw on my list to start trying to get a bill together on is, hey, if you're already currently in an office, you have to resign that office, or at least senators can't run in their interim for another office without resigning their office, because it's just ridiculous. If you're going to be a title hunter, you're going to be, you know, a resume builder, and you're going to keep hopping seats like that, step out of the way, open up your seat, and make it equal for everybody.
Well, it's kind of funny. Like in Sheridan, there's one of the businesses that makes signs. They have this big electronic sign out in front of their building, and it pretty much says, the only person we're supporting is Lori Bratton. So my guess is, again, that Cyrus saw the handwriting on the wall, decided to bow out. And, you know, there's, like I say, we heard lots of rumors about various people not seeking re-election. But, you know, in politics, rumors are just that. A lot of it is gamesmanship. So who knows what's going to happen with Ember Oakley or any of them, really. The filing period isn't even open yet, so we've got a lot of conjecturing to do and inside baseball to consider before we can settle on anything certain. So anyway, lots of candidates have announced this year. There's Gary Brown, who's going to go against my pal Bill Henderson. You know, I told Gary when the session started, you know, I don't know, Gary, I don't know if I can support you, because I count on Bill Henderson for at least one Bill Henderson comedy short every year. And good old Bill didn't deliver this year. I mean, I got little pieces here and there, but not the one all-encompassing soundbite. And so I had to switch and support Gary. But there's a number of candidates statewide that have already announced and are already running. Let's talk about some of those, Joey.
Absolutely. We'll get our official list going as the filing period opens, at least. So give us about a month and a half and we'll come out with, hey, this is everybody who's doing everything. But for now, yeah, Brown Henderson. I don't know. Bill still kind of did it for you. Unfortunately, he didn't do it the way we need it. We need a sound bite. We need to hear audio. But Bill did reply to the challenge to his seat, is what he called it. It's not your seat, Bill. It's the people's seat. And he wrote down a couple of goofy things. But, of course, that's, you know, quotes in writing. We can't play that on the air here.
Well, there was he responded to, well, not responded, but he tried to explain his vote on the gun bill. And first, I mean, if I were Gary Brown, I would take that vote on House Bill or Senate File 109, and I would just beat him over the head with it. And on House Bill 125, because he voted against that one too, didn't he?
I believe in the end, the final vote for 125, Henderson voted for it, but he did make a few votes in on amendments that would have crippled or gutted the bill. I don't know. I'd really have to get into the details. My problem is Henderson went with the, you know, liar's lie of when you can't prove and you know you're not really conservative, you use the, well, I'm taking care of my constituents' concerns here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, and if that could be a reality, I mean, Cheyenne is not a hotbed of conservatism. And Gary Brown, I think he would be, you know, a great addition to the conservative crew there in the House. But Gary might have to face the reality of Bill might be right. The voters might just want to have a rhino in there that plays the game the way he does, because that is the voice of the constituency. I don't think it's proper. I think everyone should just be honest. Hey, I'm a moderate Republican, or I'm a Democrat who can't spell, or whatever they really are. But, you know, that's how you know. When you look at and listen to the candidate, when they lean into, I represent everybody in my district, or my constituents' voices are more important to me than any group or ideology. Hey, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. You'll never hear me end with this of, what are your personal principles? Because I don't care if you're a liberal. I care if you're an insurgent. Quit putting on our team's jersey if you're not going to play for our team. It's just that simple.
Well, it's kind of interesting you bring that up, and this is just a quick sidebar conversation here. But I was attending a Constitution is the Solution meeting last night. That's a program that's developed by the John Birch Society. If you want to learn about the Constitution, it's great. Anyway, there was a long discussion in one of the lectures about how the neoconservatives intentionally invaded is the right word, the Republican Party. And how it was their intent from the very beginning to take over the Republican Party. So the neoconservatives really, they're really Trotskyite socialists. And, you know, when the Democrat Party wasn't doing it for them, so then they decided to go into the Republican Party. We're talking about people like Bill Kristol and Charles Krauthammer and Dick Cheney and you know, all of those types of people. Well, Bill Henderson and his ilk are very much that same thing. I mean, you can look at Bill Henderson's voting record, and it's atrocious. And he can say that he's representing the will of his constituents or whatever, but he's still a liberal redcoat. And, you know, in the last election, he didn't really have an opponent to speak of. So, you know, maybe he's getting elected just because he's the only name on the ballot.
Yeah, he hasn't had a Republican primary challenger since he first ran in, I believe it was 2016, maybe 2016. In fact, yeah, I think he ran the first time when I ran against Kathy Conley. That's also the year that we got Landon Brown in there the first time. And that was the last time he had a Republican challenger. He's had a few Democrat challengers in the general election, which he's beaten handily, but that first time go, you can't do the math on it and say it's going to repeat, because he wasn't an incumbent, but it was a pretty tight race that first year. But it's interesting that you brought up what they said at the John Birch Society as part of their regular presentation, because I gave a speech in 2019 when we had a vacancy in the national committee man's position for the Republican Party. And I ran with about four or five other people for that vacancy. Of course, they elected Corey Steinmetz, and we've done well with him since.
Corey's
but
done
my
a good
speech
job.
Was based on absolutely. Probably better than I could have done, because I may have been a little too much at the time and maybe still a little too much now. But the speech I gave was based on there is a war coming. In fact, it's already started. And if you think it's a war with liberal socialist Democrats, you're out of your mind. This is an insurgent war. This is an insider threat within the Republican Party. And I remember he's a conspiracy. This is the Republican Party State Central Committee kind of rolling their eyes. This was before the big divide had presented itself. This was before the emergence of the Natrona County lawsuits and Joe McGinley and the Frontier Republicans. And I remember about a year later, I reposted that speech that I gave, and a lot of people in the Republican Party is like, well, you kind of had it right. But that's what I call it. It's insider threats that are really causing the problems, at least within the party right now. The people are going to get whoever they vote for. It is what it is. You can have a large contingent of Republicans in a district that are going to vote liberal. We've seen it. Natrona, Campbell, Teton, Laramie County, Albany County. But again, it is what it is. But speaking of insider threats who aren't really conservative, I haven't heard Bob Nicholas say he's not going to run again. So it looks like that race is on between him and Kathy Russell, the executive director of the Wyoming Republican Party down there in House District 7, except for Bob might not be an insider threat because he might not live in that district.
Yeah, well, he can either run in Lander or he can run in Cheyenne. Who knows? And honestly, as we learned from the whole Dan Zwanitzer thing, it doesn't really matter where you live anyway. You just draw kind of a little box around where your new house is and then a line down to the other district. So it doesn't really matter if he lives in Lander or not. But his wife says that he lives in Lander, which is an interesting sound, or not even soundbite, a quotation we found in that article. But I expect that race to kind of be a little bit more, the term that's in my head is bare knuckles. You know, just knowing Kathy, she's pretty much a no-nonsense type of person. I think she's going to come out and say, this is Bob Nicholas's record. I won't do that. I'm going to stand up for traditional Republican principles and the Republican platform. And I expect that one to be a pretty interesting one to watch.
Definitely going to be fun to keep an eye on. I don't know if I'd use the term bare knuckles, because I know Kathy and I also know Bob. And normally when he's going to beat somebody, he does it in the privacy of a hotel room in Florida. But it's definitely not going to quote your senator, Mr. Kinski, there. It's not going to be the genteel according to Hoyle type of race. But Kathy, she won't go dirty, but she will keep it real. She will use that voting record. And it'll be more interesting to see how Bob reacts, whether he ignores anything she says, ignores his voting record, or he decides to go low and go dirty. But I don't know if it's going to be, for me, in my mind, when you say bare knuckles, I'm going to see Kathy coming out swinging and going for all of it. But some of the things we talk about, I just made a joke about Bob Nicholas beating his kid with impunity, which we have evidence of when he, down 2011 down in Florida and not living in his district. I don't know that Kathy would touch any of that stuff.
No, probably not.
Even if there was, you know, evidence for people to feed on. So I don't know if it'd be really, it's not going to be genteel, but it won't be this knockdown drag out. But that's also based on what Bob decides to do.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. We hear all the time, and I'm going to use an example of those anonymous flyers that were sent out in House District 40, Buffalo and Story, about Barry Crago. His response was, these mean, evil flyers. It's not mean or evil or wrong to use the truth. And when you expose somebody's voting record, that's not being dirty. That's not going low. That's not any of those things. I'm saying this is what the truth is. This is how this person voted. Look it up for yourself. I don't see that as going low at all. In fact, I think you owe it to voters to tell them the truth. And the biggest problem we have with almost all of these redcoats is they don't tell their constituents the truth. They come home and they pull a Barry Crago instead of saying, well, I voted against this bill. It's, well, you know, we just couldn't get that done this year. We're going to have to work on it harder next year. You know, it just we just didn't have the votes to do it. But I'm gonna continue working for you. That's the bullcrap we hear from all of these people. So candidates that are running for office, all they got to do is use their opponent's voting record. And, I mean, that's not going low. It's not playing dirty. It's not any of that. It's telling voters what the truth is.
Absolutely. And, again, one of my regular standards, and this is why I love being part of the Independence Network, equally applied principle in all situations, make whatever you say here match what's going on everywhere else, and back it up with facts and data. So if you're going to sit there and say that this is, you know, the mean evil flyer or the mean evil phantom website rating system, just go to Wild Edge, go to YouTube. You can pull this stuff up. That's what we do here at the Independence Network. We bring you those, the facts and the data. That's why we have such a long, almost full server of sound clips that we might have to expand that, by the way, because people can make those arguments. Oh, this isn't true. But if you're saying it's mean and evil because your opponent or some phantom person out there is not claiming responsibility for it, but putting it out there, and it matches the data on Wild Edge or the video on YouTube of you on the floor doing it, then wouldn't you have to call all of the government resources that are official record evil as well? Come on, get over it. Stop being a politician. There's a reason why we have a citizen legislature in Wyoming. And I think that's one of the reasons some of these people aren't going to run and some of these people aren't going to do terribly well.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're thinking about running for a race or if you've already announced, the number one weapon you've got in your toolbox is their voting record. All you got to do is show people, hey, this is how the guy voted. I'm not going to do that. And, you know, there's been quite a long history of legislators in Wyoming doing that very thing and winning. A best example of that is Bo Bightman and Rosie Berger. When Bo Bightman first ran for, you know, against Rosie, and I guess he's only run against her one time, but all he did is he had a card printed up and it had her voting record on a number of key issues on one side. On the other side, it had Bo's positions, and it was just, here you go. Read it if you want to. That's what the other guy did. This is what I'm not going to do. And just leave it right there for voters to look at and vote their conscience on it. And it worked. Bo beat Rosie pretty handily in that election.
Yeah, and this is why you're hearing the fights, the complaints over the rating websites, the flyers, all this other stuff, which turned into a piece of legislation this year. I believed it was Senate File 51, the misleading digital media. That was their first step to, you know, completely over-regulating and dismissing the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States and the protections that it gives the people, because they were going to eventually turn that into, you can't say what you want if you don't like it, whether it's, you know, on our platform preference here with the Independence Network, printed media, anything that goes through a computer, they eventually would have tagged you on and said, hey, you know, this is misleading. We don't like it, even though it's provable. And the funny thing is the proponents of that, people like Cyrus Western, Bill Novotny was sitting in the gallery the whole time hoping that that one passed. And
yeah, I wonder why Bill was.
That are criminally. Yeah, they've been proven criminally liable. Now, they haven't been charged criminally, of course. I mean, look at who they are and who would have to charge them. But there is a sheriff's investigation out there saying, no, these two elected officials did do this. And it was in the time frame of an election, at least in one case, was against somebody who was running for a public office or an office that's elected on a public ballot at the time. And nothing. So they really want to control that narrative. Speaking of people that like to control narratives and transparency, Dan Zwanitzer's got an opponent this year.
Yeah, Ann Lucas. She's been following Dan Zwanitzer for a really long time. And I think that's going to be an interesting race, too, because we got Mr. Dan Zwanitzer complaining about weaponizing transparency. You know, his complaint on the floor about the three lobbyists in the gallery, two of which were on his payroll. There's plenty of stuff to go after Dan Zwanitzer about, and I think that'll be a pretty interesting race to watch also.
Yeah, I talked to Ann at the beginning of the session, and I gave her a little piece of advice, just, you know, prove a point. I said, rent a apartment for your campaign office in what was Dan Zwanitzer's old district, preferably across the street or in the same complex as the apartment he said he lived in before, and file your candidacy at that address and see if anybody says anything. See if you're allowed to run for that office living in the old district, just like Dan did. I mean, we don't have redistricting again for another 8 years, but, you know, I like to make snarky little points like that. And I would have, you know, gladly been the candidate that did that as just a symbolic, hey, well, he was allowed to do it. Why can't I do it? Let's see how this goes. And the only problem with that would be we now have a Secretary of State who's willing to take care of business, and she'd have to remedy that. But we're going to have some interesting races down there in Cheyenne. That's three already. And then I think we've got one over on the Senate side. Tara Nethercott apparently has an opponent, but I don't know much about him, and I haven't heard anything from him really other than, hey, I'm running.
Yeah, the only thing I saw was a Facebook post that says, I'm running against Tara Nethercott. I have no idea who the guy is, don't know anything about him. But it's good that Slithers has an opponent.
Yeah, at very least to be publicly asked some of these hard questions, and then more importantly, especially for us, getting the sound bites of her answers to those questions. She's not nicknamed Slithers just because she likes to emphasize certain things with the S sound, but yeah, she's a liar and she's a creep. And I mean, she embodies the reason why when I ran for office, my campaign slogan was more warriors, less lawyers, because she literally gets in there and lawyers things on the floor before they're even law so that lawyers can find loopholes and play games with them. And it's really ridiculous because I think that kind of posture muddies the waters of the intent that the judges or courts will use to look at the law and say, how are they going to adjudicate certain things? So when she's already playing the lawyer game on the floor, it's very problematic, and she defends a lot of things that real conservative, liberty-minded, constitutional Republicans wouldn't go for at all. She defended half of the budget stuff that the rest of the Senate got rid of. Unfortunately, it came back because, well, Ogden Driscoll made her the chairman of JCC, too. She defended what I'm calling the tree zoo, the arboretum, which the state of Wyoming isn't even going to own. We're just going to dump a bunch of money into so the city of Cheyenne can maintain one of its failing amenities for the people of Cheyenne. You know, I think it's running about $3,500 per tree in that arboretum that we just spent so that we can have the financial responsibility for something that Cheyenne's going to benefit from completely, but can't seem to fund or maintain on its own. These are the kinds of things that are going to come up. And again, I'm just looking forward to her reactions to any of these questions that she's going to be asked by the public.
I think her reactions are going to be incredible. Another lawyer who's got electoral problems up in my neck of the woods is Barry Crego. He's got Mark Jones running against him. Of course, Mark Jones used to be the lobbyist for Gun Owners of America. He's still going to be the regional hunting director for Gun Owners of America. But Monday night, he announced his candidacy down at the Occidental in Buffalo. So our pal Poisonberry has got some competition. What do you think about that one?
Well, I think we can say that for now. He might pull a Cyrus Western. I hear there's a possibility he's thinking about running for Senate. So that would put him up against Kinski instead. And this goes back to something I said, I don't know, last week, maybe. Well, it could have been last week. We weren't on the air. Probably the week before. It is not necessarily the head-to-head races with any of these incumbents or like Albert Summers, Barry Crego, if they decide to run for the Senate instead. They still have some name recognition. They also have a voting record they have to defend. It may not be the races that they're currently in if they're looking to move over to the Senate. It's the vacuum they leave behind. And I think the Cyrus Western situation shows it pretty well that it's going to be pretty tough to beat Lori Bratton in that race with a newcomer or somebody else who's just waiting in the wings. If Barry runs against Kinski instead of sticking in his House seat, again, I think Mark Jones probably has a better shot of filling that vacuum fairly easily than anybody else who would step up. Unless it's Bill Novotny, because for some reason people keep electing that guy.
Yeah, I
in that area.
I can't figure that out. Any other election?
So that might be.
Sorry, what I was going to say is any other election in the country, if you got pulled over for driving on the wrong side of the interstate while blackout drunk with an open container and eluding police, your political future would be over. Not in Johnson County. That guy won the election by 1,000 votes.
I think, you know, for a guy who's got a degree in history, I think you're forgetting your history pretty quickly there. You remember Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry?
Oh, that's true. Got caught smoking crack.
With a prostitute in a hotel, served his time, came back, ran for mayor again, won by a landslide. It's possible, but it's not normal for not only here, but I would consider Buffalo rural Wyoming. And
Yeah, kind of.
I don't get it. It's got to be the good old boy thing. I don't know who he tells what to, what he says he's done as a county commissioner, but there's a possibility that that's the plan, that Crago is going to run for the Senate seat and try to take down Kinski, which is going to be immensely difficult after at least the second half of session. Just the sound bites alone from Kinski are campaign gold, but he would move out, assuming that Bill Novotny would probably run for the House seat, and that would be Mark Jones's new opponent potentially.
Yeah, I mean, either way, it's going to be an interesting race to watch. There's plenty of dirt on Barry Crago, and I mean, there's also a couple of anti-Second Amendment votes there, which is right in Mark Jones's wheelhouse. And another interesting point about Mark, you know, a lot of these candidates like Mark Jones, people kind of view them as sort of one-issue type candidates. That's not the case with Mark Jones. He's been following this property tax thing really closely. And in the conversations that I've had with him, really, aside from pending legislation on guns, the conversations I've had were all on property taxes and government spending. So Mark Jones has got a lot of tools in his toolbox, and it's going to be a fascinating race to watch. What about Fred Baldwin not running for office? I hear that Albert Sommers may run for that Senate seat, and there's already a candidate, Laura Pearson, who's announced that she's going to be running for that Senate seat. What do you think about that situation?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not terribly sad to see Fireman Fred go and, you know, put himself out to pasture. Again, this is something you have to at least assume, and we could probably draw some pretty solid lines into proving that this is all planned in advance. That Albert wants to go to the Senate. Fred is close to being done anyway. They have the conversations. They war room this kind of stuff. And they really believe that their superiority, their all the things we talk about with their elitist attitude makes them heir apparent to these positions. But this is one of those races to watch, because now you have, regardless of what you think of Albert Sommers or his multi-generational Wyomingism or his true rancher, rural agriculturalism, now you've got a real daughter of Wyoming out there ready to hit the campaign trail. And it's going to, you know, there's nothing between the two other than his experience in the legislature that's going to change anybody's mind. It's really going to, I think it's going to come down to what they say and do on the campaign trail. I don't know Laura that well. We have talked a couple times, but I'm of course leaning that way because we are a citizen legislature. And I think we need someone that's out there feeling the effects of the decisions of the legislature, the actions of government, still trying to raise a family, work hard, have an agricultural business, saying, nope, there's a reason why I'm willing to step away from that and put some attention on how, what's going on in Cheyenne affects us. So definitely keep an eye on that race. And I think there's very few people who don't have a good reason to vote against Albert Sommers moving over into the Senate for a couple reasons. One being it gives him a break every 2 years. When you get elected to the Senate, you get to sit there for 4 years. This is why we see, you know, what's the phrase, the guy in the Kinski suit.
Yep.
They tend not to worry about anything until that second budget session. And if you think that, you have an issue with Kinski doing that, wait until you see Albert Summers with 3 free years to just run ruckus over legislation and not have to worry about getting reelected.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right on that. Now, I do happen to know Laura a little bit better. In full disclosure, she is a sponsor of Cowboy State Politics, but she's a sheep rancher. She owns another hat business, which she advertises on the program. So she's an entrepreneur. She's very much the, like you put it, daughter of Wyoming. I think it's going to be a really interesting race. I mean, Albert Summers is the definitely one of the elitists. And if you listen to anything he says in the legislature, he makes that perfectly obvious. Laura's not that way. She's just kind of down home, exactly just like the person you would meet in the coffee shop. So that's going to be a pretty interesting race to watch. What else we got, Joey?
Oh, I don't know too many other races that have been announced yet at this point. I do know, I mean, by the numbers, anybody that has an even-numbered Senate seat is up for re-election. And I mentioned that because, you know, I said it on my show yesterday with Just Blame Joey Live. I see a lot of things on Facebook, and nothing defeats our good intentions and conservative arguments faster than being procedurally incorrect. So when I see things like I had a biological mailbag question from a voter of, can we find somebody to run against Cale Case this year? I'm like, I'm sure we could because there's no race there.
Yeah. We have 2 years to find them.
No, exactly. So we could put somebody up, but they're not getting on the ballot. So when that kind of stuff goes public, or I had another one that said something about Mark Gordon's veto decisions, and somebody said, we need to get rid of him in this year's election, at very least write in Brett Behan in November's election. I said, you can do that, except for there's not going to be a spot to do that because the governor is not up for re-election.
Nor can he run again.
I think it as important that we know what's going on with the elections, that we actually know what's going on with the elections. Because like I said, we have all those left-wing grammar Nazis. You got all your Rod Millers out there that are little keyboard warriors that will look for opportunity to avoid the subject matter, the actual debate, the point of what you're saying when you're procedurally wrong. So I think just as much as we should be talking about the elections, we should be spending some time here on the Independence Network talking about how elections work. A lot of people just don't know. And yeah, we're going to have to get everybody tuned up and tuned in, because not only, like I said, it deflates our argument, but it also deflates the people when they find out they're wrong. They kind of want to go and hide for a while. And during an election year is not a time to go hide. If you were motivated at one point and then you find out, you know, you were factually wrong about something, we can't afford to have you off the battlefield licking your wounds. So I don't know who else is running. We'll find out as it goes. Of course, the filing period doesn't open until mid-May, but by June 1st, we should have that final list from the Secretary of State of every confirmed candidate for every office. Oh, I almost forgot. We do have an announced Senate candidate running against John Barrasso.
Yeah, Reed Raisner.
Yeah. Interesting story about Reed Raisner. I haven't seen this anywhere else except for his own Facebook page. Somebody sent it to me again in the biological mailbag, but apparently his truck was vandalized, and he says it was a guy with a hammer, and it was he's been getting death threats, and his team's been getting death threats, and I haven't seen any of that substantiated, but he's running an interesting campaign. I know he's, again, another one of the sponsors for your show. Obviously,
well,
not a partner,
not sponsor. But he's advertising on the program.
Advertising.
Words yes. matter.
That's the word I was looking for. Advertiser on your show. But I don't know that what I'm seeing on that post. I haven't seen a police report. I haven't seen a news story. I haven't seen anything other than a picture of a bumper with a couple of dings in it. So I don't know what's going on with Reed Raisner's campaign. I just know that it's interesting to watch. Let's just leave it there.
Yeah. So I've done 2 interviews with Reed. And the first one you could tell, and I did the first interview right after he announced that he was running against Barrasso. It was your typical, I'm new to this. I just jumped in the race. I'm still kind of figuring things out. But, you know, he kind of spoke the language of liberty. And then I did a second interview with him, which was more substantive. There's a couple positions of his that I don't agree with, term limits being one of them. But he's traveling the state. He's making all the appearances. He's been up in this area at least a couple of times. So I know that he's making the rounds, and I haven't seen anything from John Barrasso. In fact, I don't even think I've gotten anything in the mail, any of his campaign materials or anything like that. So that's going to be an interesting race to watch. We'll just have to see how that one plays out. You know, John Barrasso is very likely going to be the whip in the Senate. So that makes him, what, number three in the Senate? Isn't that right, Joey?
If he gets the whip position, that would be number two. And that may be the reason you haven't seen any direct campaigning by him. I believe that he believes that getting that position is campaign clout, which it is. That's capital, political capital, but it has nothing to do with us here in Wyoming. I know people like to see the guy that's, you know, our guy, supposedly, doing better, getting a promotion or a position of responsibility, but that doesn't necessarily do anything for Wyoming. He's been the number three guy in the Senate for years, and we haven't really seen a whole lot of great things for Wyoming. Again, that's a title hunting, resume building, John Barrasso thing. So I would really like to see John, come in to Wyoming and campaign on the issues against an opponent. We've never seen that from him before. He shows up for parades. He always talks about his stories. He phantom bombs pictures with you and then sends them to you with his signature, even and especially when you don't ask for them.
Yep.
So again, that's one. It's also very early. You know, just because someone else is running against him doesn't mean that there's no other opponent that's going to crop up or that the current incumbent should be campaigning yet. The Wyoming campaign cycle is very strange.
There's some sparks flying at the Sheridan City Council. They just handed out a whole bunch of cash in 1% funds. I think, Joey, I'll just let you run with this one.
Well, what I'm reading this morning out of the Sheridan Press, the Sheridan City Council has allocated $468,200 in general purpose excise tax funds to 18 nonprofit organizations for fiscal year 2025. Now, there's a lot of content in this story from the Sheridan Press. There's people that were for it. There's people that were against it. We, of course, have our two true liberty-minded constitutional conservatives on the Sheridan City Council, Andy Pactag and it's Christian Jennings, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, Christian Jennings. So many Jennings in politics up there, it's hard to tell which position they're in.
I know. It's almost like they're a cabal.
We launched the network on that story. My very first live guest to the show was the Jennings family. Anyway, they have a history of not only voting against this kind of stuff, but calling it out for what it is, a violation of the Constitution. That, of course, happened again. There is a list here of where the money was spent. I'm sure we can get into that in a second. Most interestingly, $40,000 to $60,000 for a wayward cat rescue. Another $80,000 for
Go ahead. The cat shelter, that one creates quite a bit of heartburn around Sheridan, simply because now we're paying for two cat shelters. There's the city one, and then there's the one that they just gave money to. There's a whole bunch of stuff on this list. People they're giving money to. One of them, and this should ring a bell for you, Joey, Basin Trout Unlimited. You don't suppose, and that, they gave them $10,000, you don't suppose that has any relation to the Trout Unlimited group that we know so much about, do you?
Oh, I'm guessing that if we went and dug, everything would eventually lead back to somebody who was involved with Ella Wyoming years ago, because that original Ella Wyoming group branched out into Better Wyoming, Forward Wyoming, the Hunters and Anglers Alliance, the Women Lead Wyoming group, all of these other groups that have their hands in, you know, taxpayer money redistributed for liberal socialist purposes under really nice sounding titles. So I have no doubt that in one way or another, they're somehow related back to, I don't know, Kathy Conley, Charles Pelkey, what's her name up there in Teton County?
Yeah, well,
Storr.
Liz Storr. So a lot of these conservation groups that you hear about in Wyoming, one of them is called Muley Fanatics, but there's a whole long list of them. And another one is Trout Unlimited. Liz Storr actually started that one. She and her husband, Luther Probst. So I'm going to dig into that one and see if the Sheridan County or the city of Sheridan is giving money to Liz Storr's group. I think that would be an interesting story to dig into. But there's a lot of other things on here that... And before we get into this, Joey, let's just talk about the original purpose of 1% funds. Originally, the legislature set this up so that municipalities could allocate 1% funds for capital construction projects. So if there was a street that needed to be repaired, or you know, maybe there was they could even use it to buy a piece of equipment, but it was for things to improve the community, the essential functions of government. It was never the intended purpose to give money away to a whole bunch of nonprofits, which, by the way, as you mentioned correctly, Joey, is completely unconstitutional, which is why Kristen Jennings and Andy Patzig have voted against the budget the last couple of years, because it has all of these picking winners and loser giveaways in it.
Yeah, and let's go back to the beginning of what you stated. 1% taxes, that's the closest I'll get to not complaining about the way it's explained. I love when people say it's a one penny tax.
It's
again,
not.
Again, diverting the attention from what it is. It is a one penny tax or a 1% tax per dollar you spend. My biggest problem is when they explain it to the people to get them to vote for it, they always say it's only a one penny increase.
It's not.
No, it's a 20 to 25% increase. If your current taxes are 4 cents and you add one more cent to it, you're adding a 20% tax burden to the people. And again, like you said, it was even brought up in the meeting, essential functions of government. I had an individual speak up, John Fafakotis, at this city council meeting, and he stated, isn't it wonderful? Doesn't it make you feel all warm and fuzzy? We're spending $60,000 a year on stray cats, but we don't have a few dollars to spend on de-icing the streets the day after 8 inches of snowfall. This is the problem. The feeling good, feeling warm and fuzzy, support. Oh, these are local institutions. Well, yeah, but whether they're profitable or not, or they're tax exempt or not, they're private institutions. You know, they had a listing on here. They wanted to give $75,000 to a group called Volunteers of America, which I understand. I know who they are pretty well. Don't have a problem with what they do. What I have a problem with is the title of your group is Volunteers of America, and you're better funded by the government than some state departments because of all this tax money you get just for being a charity or a nonprofit. And I'm shocked that the city of Sheridan thinks, well, we did such a good job and we collected so much revenue from these taxes. Before we think about doing anything we should be doing or even giving it back to the people, let's spend the money we overtaxed our citizens on and give it to all these groups that literally are created to function on their own. If you have a charity, it may be a good idea. It may feel good, but it's also a business. It's not a handout. Start a charity just so you can get more taxpayer dollars. I think it comes down to about $30 per resident in Sheridan was just given to charity. And you know, well, $30 per person isn't that much. You're right. Let each person in Sheridan decide where they want to spend their $30. Stop overtaxing the people that live in these municipalities, especially when you're not providing the basic services that they're paying for with those taxes.
You just hit on what I think is probably one of the essential points in this whole thing, is that all of this money is giving under the auspices of charity. That is not an essential function of government. Government ought not be in the charity business. Davy Crockett said it best. It's not yours to give. You don't have the ability to take money from somebody and give it to some other group in the name of charity. Government is in the business of just keeping the streets smooth, the police, fire, making sure the city runs okay, and that's it. You're not to be in the charity business. That's the role of churches and private organizations, which allegedly all of these people are. Let me give you another one that really burns me. They gave $50,000 to the Chamber of Commerce. Okay, so businesses get together and form what they call the Chamber of Commerce. It's a private organization to support private businesses. And now we're giving $50,000 worth of taxpayer money to private businesses. So really, it's an attempt at the municipal level to create this dumb idea of a public-private partnership, which I don't care what anybody says. That's exactly what that $50,000 is. Government needs to be involved in everything. And the people on the Sheridan City Council, if you listen to any of them anytime, they're a bunch of socialists. And they think that the government needs to be involved in every single thing. One of the biggest problems in Wyoming is that city governments are involved in everything. One of the main arguments I have in Johnson County is that they happen to be in the real estate business. That's not an essential function of government. You're not to be a landlord. You don't lease and rent out spaces, even though communities across Wyoming do the exact same thing. But if you want to know why Wyoming communities have such a hard time creating business development, it's because of this sort of thing. Because it's actually impossible for government to create business development, which perplexingly, even the legislature thinks that government can do that. But one of the biggest numbers, well, I'm looking at the list here. One of the biggest numbers on this list is $50,000 to the Sheridan Chamber of Commerce. I mean, it absolutely infuriates me.
Yeah, and this goes back into a lot of things I've said before and are pretty standard, you know, things you're going to hear here on the morning show and across the Independence Network. First of all, the Chamber of Commerce, like you said, is not a government entity. And people have that stuck in their head. Oh, it's always been around. It must be part of the government. No, it's a private organization, just like all of these associations. So that's the first thing. Second of all, tax-exempt organizations, charities should be exempted from taxes on both sides, going out or coming in. I think that should be the first standard. You can't take tax money, and we're not going to take tax money from you. A third, I've heard the argument that Kristen Jennings and Andy Pactag made last time, it's probably Patsig. Made again last night. We're kind of talking Patsig. Sorry, I'm just reading it phonetically. My bad. It's not just that they're charities. It's that same argument we just had in the legislature is that these are entities that are not under the total control of the state. That's the violation in the Constitution that we need to talk about. Also, with the government being involved, we're double spending. If you give money to a charity, an organization, a chamber of commerce that's doing one thing, then why do we have things like, I don't know, Wyoming Game and Fish, Animal Control, the Travel and Tourism Board, the Wyoming Business Council? You're competing with yourself with other people's money by having funds going to both of these entities that are apparently doing the same job, yet none of them can actually get it done. And at the same time, another thing you hear here all the time, remember that government makes money the same way a mosquito makes blood. There is no way for the government to produce its own revenue. It has to take it from somebody else. So for them to be involved in any of this stuff on your dime, in violation of the Constitution and in competition with themselves and their previous or other outside efforts, it should be appalling to everybody. And I get it. People say, well, what are we going to do about it? Hey, we have an election coming up. You need to start looking at how people are voting, how they're spending your money, how the system actually works, and what the law and the Constitution actually say. Whether you like the guy or not, or, oh, well, at least they spent money over there because I really love cats. If you really loved cats, you would have cracked open your wallet and went and gave it, you know, some money to one of these two cat shelters. That's the way it should be. So I'm going to put it back on the people. We need to change butts in seats on a grand scale, all the way down to the municipal and board level. And if you're not preparing right now with actual documented evidence of who's a problem and why, and you're voting nostalgically and for your friends, you're going to end up getting what you deserve in the end.
You're exactly right. If you cared about all of these things, you would open up your wallet yourself. But we live under this mistaken impression that, well, it's, you know, the government can give money to whomever because, you know, it's a good cause, Joey. You know, this cat shelter, it's a really good cause. We don't want those poor kitties to get cold outside at night, and they just really have to have a nice place to live. No, that's not an essential function of government, and if you cared about it, crack open your own checkbook. We could substantially reduce the size of government if we only looked at what the essential tasks of government are. And it's not that hard. I mentioned them earlier. Keep the streets nice. We need a police force. Some fire protection would be great, or at least fight fires. Make sure the government, you know, the administration runs okay. And other than that, stay the heck out of all of this stuff. And especially don't give $500,000 to private organizations who get money from all sorts of other people. Secondly, it's against the Wyoming Constitution. I mean, it just blows my mind all of the ways that local politicians and state politicians try to work around the Constitution. Here's an idea. Why don't we just follow the damn thing?
Well, or at least as we the people compare and complain. If you have legislative incumbents that are running for office this year who argued against the, school choice bill by saying we are now funding Christian education and the Constitution. You heard this argument all over the place in both chambers. We're not allowed to give this money to these kinds of organizations. They're not under the total control of the government, and they're, you know, non-interests of the legitimate functions of government. They're all the arguments they made. Ask them if they support this in Sheridan County, saying, well, you said this on the floor, but the city council said this. So do you support them spending this $480,000 on that? Because you're going to find hypocrisy and contradiction in that. You can't do on one side what you're not willing to do across the board. And if you see any of these city council members, other than the two that voted against it, trying to crop up and run for office this year or run for higher office, same question. How did you feel about the school choice bill and the arguments that were made there versus what you did here? Because I'm telling you, we're running into that time of year or that time of the biennium where you're going to see a lot of hypocrisy, a lot of lying, and a lot of inconsistency in support for actions or actions they've taken themselves compared to other arguments they've made and things that have gone into law. And the bottom line is, on both sides, it has cost the taxpayer money a ridiculous amount of money. And if you think, well, it doesn't bother me because I don't live in Sheridan, well, think again. They may have taken that money out of the pool that is taxes specifically from Sheridan, but if you ever drive through Sheridan, you've also paid those taxes. And every year when the city of Sheridan gets its budget, it budgets off of what? Money that came from the state coffers through the county commissioners down to the town. Now, Sheridan, it takes care of itself. It generates revenue pretty well. But every taxpayer in Wyoming has paid into that fund.
Yep.
So I don't care if you live in Lyman. I don't care if you live in, I don't know,
Bill
Lusk. You have contributed to and are involved with. It's the same argument on anything else. Well, that's my tax dollars out there. And it may not be a whole lot of money directly from you, but you are involved in contributing to this pool of money that they're drawing out. And apparently Sheridan has so much of it, it can give $500,000 to charity. Well, other people, other towns can't even have water towers that work.
Here's another one that's that really fries me. Let's see here. On the list, there's one called the Hub on Smith. So essentially, that is the senior center in Sheridan. Now, the Hub on Smith has a budget of, I think it's something like $9 million a year. They have a huge staff. One of their administrators makes in excess of $100,000 a year. They get money from all sorts of places, and here we are giving them $80,000. Now, if you want to create a senior citizen district like they did in Buffalo, go ahead and put it up for a vote. Put it on the ballot and let people vote to say whether or not they want to pay taxes to a senior center. It is not up to five people on the city council to decide whether or not we give taxpayer dollars to a private organization that is run for profit. I know all of these people say, well, we're nonprofits, but really when you get down to it and you've got a budget in the millions of dollars and your administrators are making in excess of $100,000 a year, that's not nonprofit. There's people profiting there from your tax dollars. And I mean, we could pick any one of them off of this list. And it's just, again, it just absolutely fries me that we take public money, tax dollars, money out of your pocket, and we give it to private organizations when they're perfectly capable of raising their own cash. Well, Joey, we've got about a minute and 15 seconds left. Why don't you wrap this up for us?
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, people, if you're listening now, thank you. If you're not telling other people about it, hey, get on it. All these things we talk about, it's not just for your information. If we can inspire people to think and spread that word, that's the goal here at the Independence Network. So make sure you're sharing all of the content you find on, I don't know, Independence Network, Facebook, any of your social media sites, the website, www.independencenetwork.us, with your friends. Get involved in the conversation. We'll be happy to hear from you anytime and take up any of your concerns as a topic on the morning show or any of our shows independently. I got to head down the road. I've got a doctor's appointment today. So it looked like it's going to be David running the show all morning this morning, and hope to see you guys back here again tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the Independence Network. We're a radio station focused on one thing, the truth. Bringing you the truth with verified facts about everything, really. Lying politicians, bad government policy, you name it. Catch your favorite personalities every day on the network. Joey Correnti from Just Blame Joey, Ken Pendergraft from The Ramble Room, and me, David Iverson from Cowboy State Politics.